All right, real quick, people, before we get into today's show, we've just released a new course, Periodization for Periods, all around how to train women around their monthly cycle, and we've got it on special. If you're interested, click the link in the show notes.
You are now listening to the Fitness Education Online Podcast, the podcast where fitness professionals go to grow their fitness business. If you're in the fitness industry, you'll find tips and strategies from proven business experts. Now, let's start the show.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fitness Education Online Podcast. I'm your host, Jono, and I am super excited because we've got an awesome guest on the line this week. He's one of our course creators. You may have actually taken his course if you're listening to this. He's created a course on training clients with lower body injuries. He's a physiotherapist himself, my physiotherapist as well. That's who I see when I have any injuries. I haven't had any lately. That's why you haven't seen me recently there, brother.
Awesome.
He's also in the process of putting together another course, training clients with upper body injuries. I'll introduce him and then we'll get to the topic and the course or whatnot. But it's Ives Silveira. Ives, how are you, mate?
Good, Jono. Great to be on the call today.
Awesome. And let the listeners know, we're doing this on a Sunday morning, 10 a.m. What did you get up to last night?
So last night was my sister's wedding. So we've had a bit of a big night, but the work doesn't stop. So no, excited to keep going and talk to your wonderful community about my new course.
Awesome. Awesome. So just a bit of background. It's going to depend when you're listening to this, right? But if you're listening to it live, the course actually starts this week. So it's going to be like a live or a, would you call it live? I mean, even online sounds like live these days, right? But it's essentially live Zoom calls. So it's 6 weeks of live Zoom calls. Ives will tell us a little bit about it later, but essentially every week is a different area of the body. Ives will say, hey, here are the common injuries. Here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to avoid. Here's what you need to do, yada, yada, yada. If you're interested in that, just click the link in the show notes and it'll take you to more info. But before we dive deeper into that, Ives, actually, even before anything, give everyone a little bit of background in case they haven't heard of you before, haven't done a course before. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do in 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Jono. My name's Ives. I'm a physiotherapist. I have been a physiotherapist now for almost 11 years, which is pretty crazy when I think about it. I have a background working in elite sport. I've been very lucky to have worked with a lot of teams in elite sport, including the GWS Giants, the Swans in the AFL, and cutting my craft, working with a lot of elite netball teams as well. As well as that, I also own my own clinic, YS Physio, in Sydney, in the southeastern suburbs there in Alexandria, where I have a team of amazing people that help us deliver our mission, which is put the care back in healthcare. And we love doing that. And like you said, I love educating and teaching, and that's how I got involved with FEO through you, Jono, of course. And we're really looking forward to building on our level one course and now, you know, educating more personal trainers to show that you have such a big and important role to play in working with people who are injured. And there's just so much you can operate within your scope of practice to help them. So that's a succinct summary. But I guess, yeah, a great starting point for what we're trying to do together.
Awesome. So what we want to do in this podcast here for a bit of fun is just go through the upper body. Just pick a different joint in the upper body and Ives will let us know a common injury in that joint, what we need to know as personal trainers, what to do, what to avoid. And great, it'll give all the listeners some tips. And if you like it and you want more info, well, you know, check out the course where it'll obviously be a lot more detail. Which joint do you want to start with, Ives? What's your, should we start top up or go bottom up?
Let's go top to bottom, I reckon.
Top to bottom, right?
Yeah.
So we'll start, you're doing neck in this one as well, right?
Yeah, so we're doing neck in this one as well.
Awesome. All right, cool. So, and what we thought would be a bit of fun is if I guess the injury, and Ives lets us know what his most common one is. Yep. So I'm going to say neck. That's an interesting one because I'm just going to say whiplash.
Whiplash. I guess it's actually not as common as you think. I mean, for whiplash, there's got to be a huge amount of force to generate that neck injury. I guess the most common thing we see in the neck.
Yeah. Can I change?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just going to say, actually, no, yeah, you let me, I had my guess.
You had your guess, Jono. You can go again in another body part, but the most common condition we see in the neck is a thing called a wry neck, which is essentially a condition sometimes. You know, when you just wake up and your neck just feels stiff and doesn't move, and there's no real clear mechanism as to what caused it.
Yeah.
That's generally the most common thing we see with neck injuries.
What was it? Say it again?
It's called a wry neck.
How do you spell wry?
W-R-Y.
Okay, there we go. All right. Well, let us know a little bit about it, Ives. If someone comes in, what do you guys do? And then what do they need to do in the gym? What do we need to be careful of? What are some things we could do? Give us the rundown on wry neck.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So first of all, it can be quite intimidating, I want to say, because, you know, people will present and they can't move their neck. They'll generally be very stressed and anxious about it. But what I wanted to say was it's actually something very common and very easy to manage. And PTs can work with people with this. So how we commonly manage it, of course, is firstly is educating people once we've done a thorough assessment to understand that, you know, it's not too bad a condition. Generally, it can occur when people, like you said, they can just wake up a bit stiff and sore. There could be a bit of stresses in people's lives and sort of an area of tension we take it is in the neck. How we manage it is, you know, working on some different exercise strategies to get the neck moving, maybe some hands-on therapy. Again, the education is super important, and they generally tend to resolve fairly quickly with the right intervention. So,
what do you mean by education? Ives?
Yeah, absolutely. So, if you can imagine, and once we've done this clear diagnosis, people can be very scared when they come in with the right neck because they can't move their neck. Yeah. And the research will actually show that gentle movements is actually a great way to start going about it. So that the right education about giving people the right information and what to do can actually be really important, because the last thing you want to do for this sort of condition is do absolutely nothing. Yeah. It'll actually just make people worse in a way. Yeah. And that's where the PTs can work in really well, because gentle movement is actually important, and you can, depending on the severity of it, you can certainly train people with a right neck.
Gotcha. Now, let's say someone goes in and sees you. I'm guessing it depends on the severity, right?
Absolutely, Jono. Yeah. Let's put that caveat there, because I don't want people listening to this going, all right, I heard I've said it was just a right neck. So, you know, step up and train. It's not quite like that, but understand that, you know, depending on the severity, you can actually train people with it, especially, and I guess the big precursor is if they free up and they have a good range of motion in their neck, that's a really good precursor. So say, okay, we're going to take it a bit easier today, but we can work within that scope. But of course, if they're really stiff and they can't move their neck, it's going to be very hard to train them on the day.
Yeah. Say with that, would that be a day off work thing, Ives? Does someone wake up?
So a lot of people would. But the good news is it's generally only a day or two before it starts to resolve. So that's the important thing. So I don't want, you know, our community to start panicking, going, oh, goodness, how long is this going to be?
Yeah.
Right advice, right guidance. It'll resolve fairly quickly.
Gotcha. So let's use that maybe scenario then. Someone comes in, they wake up with wry neck, they take the day off work, they go and see a physio, I've given them some education, maybe some gentle tips. They're good enough to go to work the next day. Is that, I guess, a good sign of the gym as well? If they're good enough to go to work and they can move around a bit, can they go to the gym and do what they can? Or would you say, hey, take a week off? Or I know it's all depends on the severity, but what can you tell us there?
Let's take a quick break.
When it comes to influencer marketing, there's a podcast that covers it all that you will want to add to your playlist. The Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. They talk about influencer marketing, social media, the creator economy, social commerce, and much, much more. They cover all aspects, including the creator economy, social commerce, the latest trends, the metaverse, TikTok trends, and that's just the beginning. The Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory. Add the podcast to your playlist right now.
I have to use that word depending on the severity, of course, but I can tell you in most cases it's not within 24 to 48 hours it tends to improve. And as I've sort of talked a lot about on your podcast, like, movement is medicine, so we always are trying to encourage some form of gentle movement in some capacity. Like, as I've, you know, been very clear about, it's very rare if ever I ever say to a client, don't go to the gym, because there's always something you can do. Again, wry neck, maybe we can just do some gentle lower body stuff if the body allows for it, things like that. So, generally within a few days, we can get back to doing everything we love doing.
And is there anything specific a personal trainer would need to be wary of?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, what are your takes? So someone comes in. I know there's never a no. No, you can't do a lat pull down or whatever. But what are some things we should be careful of that we think could maybe aggravate it? Or what can you tell us there?
So the first thing is I'm talking about a specific condition where the neck seizes up and there's no, which I'll go through in my course, there's no red flags like nerve pain radiating down the arm. There's no severe headaches, migraines, dizziness, things like that. And of course, we don't expect personal trainers to be able to diagnose that, but that's just something to be aware of because you might think it just might be a wry neck, but this is why it's important not to operate outside your scope of practice and refer on if you're unsure because, you know, that's what we do as physios. I love saying this. I've learned this on the last course. We, as physios, have a thorough assessment and make sure because it might, a wry neck might be a symptom of a more sinister condition in the neck. So we just got to be aware of that. And the other thing is the severity, of course. There is no use pushing through a pain barrier with this. It's actually just important to see what, you know, if it's a simple wry neck and you've got some gentle range of motion available to you, just work within that range and make sure you don't make the client get worse. I think that's the other thing as well. But this is, again, where it's just important. I'd say even with a wry neck, it's good to have a healthcare professional that's overseeing the client. But the important thing for BTs is that they can come back to training generally very quickly under supervised care. And that's what's important. It's not like you have to put a line through them for a couple of weeks or anything like that. They generally resolve fairly quickly.
Awesome. And it sounds like with a wry neck as well, because most of the time as a fitness professional, we're not doing specific neck exercises that would aggravate it. You know, sometimes in jujitsu and wrestling, you do kind of those ones. We don't really do much of that. So it would more be like, hey, go a bit lighter today. If it aggravates it, let me know and we'll go and do something else. Kind of thing, right?
I think that's always a really safe way to go about things. And as you know, from my level one course, I've always said there's generally always something we can substitute and switch with, even if it's something completely different, like in this case, a lower body exercise. But like you said, I'll always say the precursor depending on the severity and the condition in front of you. And sorry to be a fuddy-duddy like that, but it's very important. I always say that along the way. You are not trained health professionals, so it's hard to make those calls. So if someone does rock up with a wry neck, it would be irresponsible of you to start training them straight away unless they've spoken to someone else who knows. But under supervised care of like a physio, I would happily send someone back a couple of days later with clear instructions in what to do.
Awesome. All right. Let's move down the body. Shoulder.
Well, Jono, how about you? Yeah, you guess what you think the most common thing is. And then I want you to guess how you think we manage it, like just out of inches. Yeah. So say the condition and how we manage it. So shoulder.
Okay, cool. Shoulder. So this is an interesting one because I'm going to say, actually, I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
The shoulder mainly, because I'm guessing things like the neck, the back, probably the wrist as well, the elbow, like anyone can kind of get those. I'm guessing with a shoulder, would it be mainly sporting injuries or accidents?
That's a really good question.
More specific, but like, I just can't. Is there many, like, is an everyday Joe that's like, oh, I've got this shoulder injury.
Of course, that is a really good question. How I'll answer that is you're right. Like a lot of the times we see, like one of our big muscles, our upper trap, comes all the way around and attaches in and around the shoulder. So a lot of the time that muscle can get tight and shoulder pain can actually be associated neck pain. Okay. And like the wry neck, you could feel it all the way down. So they can say, oh, my shoulder's sore, but it's actually...
actually the neck,
the neck. So that was a really nice question. So well done, mate. I was hoping to stump you, but you got me there.
So it is that condition you're talking about?
Yes. All I was saying is that commonly, sometimes shoulder pain is actually just, I wouldn't say referred neck pain, but it's that whole area being sore, but presenting in soreness in the shoulder region.
Gotcha.
Now,
tight traps. Okay. Yeah.
Associated rhy neck. That's what you'll commonly see PTs. But you are right in terms of if you're seeing, there's two sort of factors with shoulders. The first thing is, if say an unstable shoulder or like, you know, we talk about a subluxation or a dislocation, there's generally a traumatic nature and hopefully in your screening of them, you would have picked that up. Yep. And I'll go into detail in my course about that condition and how to manage it well, because it's actually more common than you think that someone, you know, they might even, like, as PTs, in our course, the level one, we're still in week one going through the subjective and objective assessment like we did in the previous course, because I really want to reinforce the importance of taking a good history and how that helps you train your clients, because you might pick up that, oh yeah, 20 years ago, I dislocated my shoulder. Yep. It's huge information, Jono.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they might not have trained for ages, and yeah, they may be at risk if you're doing a lot of upper body functional strength work of actually irritating that joint. And you might be the first person that's ever asked them that question. So it's something just to keep in mind when training. But yeah, there's generally something a bit more traumatic. Or another one of your courses, which I was looking at, they're training older clients. They might have something called, you know, the simple term is a frozen shoulder or a bit of an adhesive capsulitis. You want to write that down.
Yeah.
And that's a condition essentially where the capsule starts to freeze up and it limits their range of motion. And that actually changes the game in how you train them as well. Because there's the research shows it can actually take 18 months up to 2 years sometimes to fully unfreeze that condition. There's only so much you can do whilst those people have that limited range, but it doesn't mean they can't train. It just means you have to work with what they got. So a bit of a threefold approach there, Jono. Yeah. So you've got the referred upper trap or neck sort of condition, which is super common, but it'll present with like my shoulder sore. You've got the more traumatic, like subluxation or an old dislocation. And then for the older clients, you've got this frozen shoulder, a really interesting joint.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Let's move down the body again.
Yep.
Elbow. I know I've got this one in the bag.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think so. I think most people would. What do you think it is?
Tennis elbow for sure, right?
Oh, I'd say so. I'd say that's the most common thing I see around that. Why do you think that is, Jono, as a...
That's a good question.
Lex Fizz. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is everyone getting tennis? Why is tennis elbow the most common elbow injury we treat in clinic? Which
let me have a think about that. I'm going to ask you some questions while I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Because also the other thing is, like, I'm guessing it's not mainly tennis. Well, let's ask that question. Of the amount of tennis elbows that you see, what percentage actually get it from tennis?
You know, I have to give a quick history. Tennis elbow was... The history of it was actually I'm a tennis nerd, as you know, as well.
Yep.
It was actually based on a one-handed backhand, not two-handed, because it would put your wrist in this sort of an extended position, and that overuse would actually hurt the elbow. So in the modern-day game, with lots of people hitting a two-handed backhand, you don't actually see it too much in tennis players, ironically. So I just a fun fact for your listeners out there.
Yeah, there you go. All right, well, I'm guessing.
So less than 1%,
okay.
If that.
Okay,
yeah.
And is tennis elbow, out of curiosity, is that the most common upper body injury you will see?
Poor. I mean, if you had to ask me off the top of my head, I think I see those right necks more, and I was definitely seeing that more, through this, you know, just coming out of the pandemic, with a lot of people working from home and, working from home setups, ergonomics, I think that's playing a part. But my goodness, we do see this a fair bit as well.
So I'm gonna throw out some different thoughts and let me know if I'm warm or way off.
Yeah.
So it's an overuse injury, tennis elbow, right?
Correct.
So I don't know if like the phones and the computers have anything to do with it. Or another thing, I had another idea. So phones, computers, maybe if it's in guys. If they're doing a lot of like bicep curls, a lot of tricep extension, you know, and maybe even in women, if they're doing like high reps of, you know, of things around the elbow joints, they're probably the thoughts I'd have. If there's a lot of like computer work and your elbows are in the wrong position, or if you're in the gym and you're doing a lot of elbow work.
Yeah. Look, you're on the right track for all of them. I'll address them one at a time. So I absolutely think ergonomic setups with computer work. It's something I also do on the side, which is setting up people's ergonomic workstations so that they're ergonomically viable. Huge.
Yep.
Because if you're sitting for 8, 9, 10 hours a day and you're at a setup which isn't ergonomically viable and your shoulder's in a heightened position and your neck's maybe a bit tight, so of course that's going to be impacted. But as you're using that mouse, you're going to get overuse through that elbow.
It's the mouse, is it?
Potential is one contributing factor, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say it's definitely the mouse in every time, but on the left hand, a mouse can be like that. But just typing, think about typing. The other thing is, Another thing with tennis elbows, you can just see here, is we're in this sort of extended position for long periods. So when the wrist isn't neutral, it actually puts stress on that elbow, and that can actually put pressure on the area. So workplace ergonomics is a huge part, and I saw that a lot during the early years of the pandemic, particularly with some of the working from home setups I saw in the early days.
Yeah.
As you probably remember, feels like a lifetime ago, but the ironing boards were out.
Yeah.
Kitchen benches, oh man, all this stuff. So that's probably the most common thing. So that would account for the vast majority of conditions for tennis elbow. But I did want to address the training because a big part of my course will be addressing getting the fundamentals right to help your clients, you know, achieve their goals as well, which I'll embed into my course. And, you know, I'm very lucky to treat a lot of powerlifters, and they have, you know, and I can say hand on heart, they have much more exercise prescription expertise for some of that high end stuff.
Yep.
But what I do is I literally take it back to the fundamentals and teach them fundamental ways before they start lifting their heavy weights. I look at mobility in the shoulder and the neck. I look at looking at activation exercises, and it's amazing how when you it's a bit like, Jono, if you're building a house, you need a strong concrete base to build the fundamentals. So I certainly help people with that, and that helps decrease your risk of tennis elbow, because if you have good shoulder activation or shoulder mobility, just a good foundation through that, it's going to help you when you lift those heavier weights. Because then what we tend to see, as you correctly pointed out, there's a lot of people just throwing weights around, lifting heavy, and I'm sure their form, quote unquote, is actually not too bad. But, you know, they just lack some fundamentals through there, which puts more pressure on the area. So that's certainly something that would help a lot of your trainers. And we're going to go in and dive deep into some of those tips and tricks into what to do for those conditions.
Gotcha. What about someone's got tennis elbow, Ives? They've got tennis elbow. You know, it's painful to do any kind of elbow flexion, I guess, or extension.
Yeah.
As a personal trainer, if someone comes in, how do we kind of deal with that? Let's have a conversation there.
Severity is key. So first of all, like, this is where early intervention is so important, because as you quite rightly said, tennis elbow builds up over a long period of time. It doesn't just happen. It's sort of overuse, and the pain is like the end result of a lot of dysfunction. So if it's flared up, and I know people on the call be like, oh, I've had clients that have had it for years and it goes through ups and downs. Well, I think the most important bit of advice is to work with a health professional who can help you understand what is the underlying cause of that tennis elbow.
Yep.
And that's important too, Jono. If a clinician that you're working with is only treating the elbow, that's not good enough, because there's a lot of biomechanical things that are leading to that. I explained just in that powerlifter example, sometimes if you're throwing around a lot of upper body weights, what's their shoulder like? What's their neck like? What's all of that like? The amount of people I've helped their elbow by literally identifying dysfunction in their shoulder has been paramount. And I love, you know, one of the things I love hearing is like, oh, wow, no one's ever addressed higher up. So that's really important. But again, like, don't panic. Don't send them away straight away. See what you can do outside of that, you know. Look at the other limb, look at other exercises, and then try and, you know, hopefully utilize my course where you can, because I think mobility is just a great one for it. Like, I don't believe you're operating outside of your scope of practice if you just give generic, just say, you know what, you look a bit stiff like anyone. Let's give you some mobility exercises.
Yeah. And if it happens to rehab the thing, it's a nice added bonus, isn't it?
That's not operating out of scope of practice. As long as you say, hey, you know, if this gets worse, we're going to need to work with someone. But that's nice ways to operate within your scope of practice. You're not rehabbing it. You're not saying, I'm going to hold it. You're just using the principles I teach you to go, you know what? I did say that, you know, if you're stiff in the upper body, you might help. And you'd be amazed how much that could help. As long as you're clear in not diagnosing it, as long as you're clear in just saying, hey, we're going to work within this pain. And everyone has aches and pains. I imagine that's why many people are doing our course. So,
a couple of questions for you. If, let's say, a client comes into a personal training session or a boot camp, and they're like, hey, Jono, my elbow's been playing up a bit, you know, it's a bit tender here.
Yeah.
You'd always recommend go see a physio first, right?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, absolutely.
Sounds,
I can't,
Sounds like tennis elbow. I don't know. I'm not a physio though. Look, go and see a physio. They'll assess the severity. They'll tell you what you can and can't do. Come back, let me know, or I'll speak. That's always step one, right?
That's always step one. But I, you know, and you can help me with this as well. But I would say, I'd say that exact phrase. Say, but in the meantime, we're going to just, do lower body exercises.
Yep.
Do some basic mobility. So then you've covered yourself as well. But you look very credible. Because you're actually, you know, you're not trying to diagnose it. You're still involving them in the boot camp. Like, there is no reason why they couldn't do squats, deadlifts, different, depending on the severity. Sorry, not to go into too much detail. I'm trying to probably overthinking this. But just know you don't need to just send them away straight away. You're just identifying that they have an issue, that you'd like it addressed. But in the meantime, we're going to, you know, try and make this boot camp work for them in the meantime.
What usually happens in that scenario with a physio? Someone comes in, they say, I've got tennis elbow.
Yeah.
What do you kind of do? What does the treatment plan look like?
Yeah.
Obviously, it depends. We know that. But give us like a generic indication.
I don't mind this because I've seen this condition treated so poorly over the journey. And I just want our PTs to know what I would be looking for a good PT. What I would not be looking for is someone that's gone straight to the sore area, which is the outside of the elbow. So I couldn't show here. There we go. And just start rubbing it. Like, it's an irritated tendon. A little bit of frictioning may help, but you've got to address why it's sore in the first place.
Mm.
I want a physio to do a thorough assessment and look at all the contributing factors that might be causing that. I want that physio to have understood, are they a power lifter that needs some technique? Not technique, because I don't want to talk too much, but they may have some deficits or, you know, imbalances or, you know, for lack of a better word. I don't like that word either, but I think we understand what we're talking about. I want them to address if our client sit at a computer for 10, 12 hours a day and, you know, just say, hey, let's just get moving a little bit in between. And maybe, you know, sometimes a little bit of tape can certainly help offload the tendon itself, but doesn't fix the problem. So things like that is what we're looking for as good physiotherapists with that. And then I'm looking for that physio to, and this is important, connect with that PT who referred them and say, hey, thank you for that referral. This is the diagnosis or provisional diagnosis. And this is what I think they can and can't do in boot camp. So that's what I'd be looking for.
Let me summarize that, make sure I've got that. The physio, someone comes in with tennis elbow, that's probably a pretty easy diagnosis for a physio, right? This person has tennis elbow. The important thing is to realize what caused that tennis elbow. What is that person doing that caused it? What's the problem? Great, let's fix that problem, whatever that may be, and then time will essentially heal the injury. Is that kind of how it works?
I mean, they'll be given the right rehab strategies. The other thing I didn't mention, of course, I guess rehab specific, which I'll get into, like we like addressing doing some wrist isometric exercises, which helps in tendon really healing. We would look at the shoulder and the neck and look at some of the muscular dysfunction there. But in terms of working with the PTs, they should be clear on what the physio is doing and they should be clear on what they can be doing while doing the rehab. Remember, I've also mentioned that if a physio gives a specific exercise plan, under the guidance of an exercise plan, there's, you know, people can do their rehab with their PT.
Because
the PT, as long as the PT is not prescribing, it's even better. Yeah. It's great for us because they have someone else
make sure
there's an exercise doing it right.
Yeah, exactly. So, and make sure they actually do it. You know, I'm sure the amount of times you've given someone a rehab program, they come back and said, you do it. Nah, I didn't do it.
Can I just tell a quick story? I'm sure, my cousin won't mention it, but my cousin, just has this condition from tennis elbow. Yeah.
Okay.
So he's just been dying. He just started seeing me and he has a brilliant PT. Like, and I actually called this PT personally and just said, I've never met the guy. And I said, I just want to thank you for looking after my cousin so well, because he's the epitome of what I want to see in your profession, John, because my cousin started, you know, exuberating symptoms when doing certain exercises. So all he tried to do straight away was like, right, I'm not sure what's going on. So I'm just going to change the exercise or position to make sure it's not hurting your elbow. And I want you to go see me to work out what's going on. And the way he went about it was so systematic, so within his scope. And I called him and said, thank you. Handed over the rehab program. My cousin's getting an amazing results now because he's training with his PT 2-3 times a week with the exercises that I've given. His PT is an amazing practitioner in terms of understanding form and guidance and programming. And what's the end result? My cousin's getting a great result and he's happy as well. So It's very important alliance. It's the best combination.
Yeah.
What the PT never did, though, Jono, was say, you have tennis elbow, let's prescribe this.
Yeah,
that's the line we don't cross.
Yeah.
But I hope it's clear that there's still so much we can do. So that's what's really important.
Love it. All right. Yeah. Let's keep it moving down the body. Wrist. I think this is an easy one. It's got to be carpal tunnel, right?
Yeah, look, very, very, very similar overuse. I don't want to talk about it too much because this can get very complicated. Because when carpal tunnel can really flare up, that's when you need to completely offload. That's when sometimes some of these, when they get really bad, also need surgical intervention. So just to be aware of that. But carpal tunnel for those playing home is when, you know, there's this irritation around the sheet that where the nerves run through, and it can just get a bit irritable. So this one is definitely needs early intervention. So don't muck around. If you're getting nervy wrist pain, like, refer on straight away, because even sometimes we as physios need to refer on. And it's a perfect thing to talk about hands. I'm a physiotherapist. There are specific hand therapists out there.
Yeah, there are too.
So I can tell you that even as a physio, we refer on to hand therapists when the condition gets quite nasty. So please bear that in mind. Do not muck around with hands. Me being a physiotherapist, I have these hands insured for quite a bit of coin, actually, anything happen. But carpal tunnel is something PTs will see. The other thing is, which you won't see as commonly, but like post-injury, post-like a traumatic injury, just be aware if anyone has a fall at your boot camp or anything, there can be broken bones and things like that. And we just need to be very wary of that. And I'll address that in the course a little bit, but that's essentially a very clear refer on. There's not much else to say with that. Yeah.
Well, say carpal tunnel, Ives. Obviously, actually, let's go back a step. What usually causes it in your experience? Is it computer or phone?
Yeah, absolutely. This is where the mouse comes into it. Overuse, same sort of things. Absolutely. Similar to the tennis elbow.
Yep. Awesome. Phone as well, or mainly keyboard?
I found mainly keyboard for what it's worth, but who knows? If you're in that position for a long time, like, that could definitely be a contributing factor.
Gotcha. And I'm guessing it's never gym, right? It's never, or is it?
Oh, could, you ever get, like, again, with overuse.
Have you seen it?
It's not as common. It's not as common. Hang on, but let me answer this a little bit more appropriately. Gym could be a big contributing factor. Like, it's rarely one thing, you know what I mean? Gotcha. There's a few different factors, and it's very, we always say this as physiotherapists, it's like you can't just say it's
a bench press wrong, that caused carpal tunnel.
Yeah. Was it the bench press? Was it then, oh, you're at your computer 10 hours a day, your ergonomic setup's not right, you're tight through your pecs and your lats. Anyway, so there's a lot that goes on. It's not a straightforward, it's this, very rarely at least.
Gotcha. And what are the things in the gym that would usually aggravate it?
So again, like you said, if you're in those prolonged positions with heavy weights over a long period of time.
And that's with the wrist in flexion,
the
right?
Wrist, yeah, just a different end.
Either way.
Like, and I'm using the phrase carpal tunnel because it's an easy one to remember, but I don't want to get into the specificity. I'm just talking about wrist-related pain where there might be a compression in that area, just to be specifically clear. So prolonged positions off the wrist, but particularly I found in that, you know, in that extension position.
Gotcha. Now, say someone has carpal tunnel, they see a physio like yourself.
Yep.
Would you treat that, or would you always?
Yeah. You can be making splints for it to offload it, and things like that. We would handball and refer on, but there is definitely stuff we can treat. Let me explain that again. Like the tennis elbow, we'll be looking at that whole kinetic chain. We'll be looking at the forearm extensors. We'll be looking at the shoulder. We'll be looking at what could be driving that carpal tunnel in the first place. We'll definitely be taping to offload it and support it. But all I want to say is we don't muck around if it's really flared up, and we'll refer on as well.
Gotcha. Okay. And if it's, and I'm guessing if it's really flared up, you're probably not doing any upper body stuff in the gym because you can't grip anything.
You can't. Yeah. It's very obvious to the PTs. Like, they just literally wouldn't be able to do stuff.
Yeah. But you've been saying that. You could do cardio. You could do lower body.
Always. Like I said, I mean, just use of that hand and that limb. But again, other hand, lower body, things like that. There's always stuff you can be doing. That boot camp was a great one, what you said about the tennis. I'll be like, great. Okay, thank you for mentioning that. We're not going to flare that up, but we're going to do other things for you.
Yep. Awesome. So I've got two questions on that.
Yeah.
This will be a hard one to answer, but how long does an average carpal tunnel...
No.
You can't
answer that.
Yeah, okay.
Because it depends on the severity, the underlying causes, but it's generally a longer-term thing that you'll be... I guess that's an important part. You'll be working with your clients to manage that. And there'll be good days and bad days too. So even when they come back to PT, you've just got to be aware of it the whole time, that if they have a flare-up, you've just got to change what you do.
Gotcha. All right, final question, Ives. You've mentioned a few times throughout this podcast where it's like, hey, you know, you can do the other arm. What's the latest on that? So let's say someone's got tennis elbow on their arm. They can't do, you know, bicep curls on their right arm. Is it beneficial just doing it on the left arm for a couple of weeks, or is that going to do more damage than good, or is it going to help? What's your take on that? And not just even the elbow, anywhere in the body.
Well, I love this question. And I'll finish with this. There was a scientific study done about 10, 12 years ago with people that broke their arm. I think it was skiing. And they had two groups. One group did absolutely nothing for 6 weeks while in the cast. And the other group did a heap of upper body work with the opposite arm. So they took the cast off after 6 weeks. And as you can imagine, John, both groups lost a decrease in muscle mass.
Yep.
But the group that was doing a lot of work with their other arm had significantly less loss in muscle mass compared to the one that did absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So what that tells us is that even when we're training the opposite side, we can still get some effects on that injured side. And that's certainly why whenever we do rehab, we're always doing both sides as well. Like I rehab a lot of people with lower limb injury. Like we still want to make sure that as we – like an ACL rehab – you know, sorry to go lower limb, but that's a good one. Like we're still doing exercises on the other side to make sure that as we grow, as we improve, like we improve together. Because sometimes when you're doing these rehabs, you might not have done exercises on the opposite side and doing different things. So yeah, just to keep that in mind, there's definitely things you can do with the opposite limb that will help. It's certainly not a do nothing. Of course, the condition in front of you will dictate what you can and can't do and work with it. Physio, but as a general principle, there is stuff you can do with the opposite side.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. Well, Ives, that's everything I wanted to get through on this podcast. For everyone listening, if you're interested in taking Ives' course all around training clients with upper body injuries, it's running live. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's running live this week. But even if you can't make it this week, we're then going to obviously put the replays together, make it an on-demand course, get it approved with OSACTIV for CEC. So even if you can't get it now live or you're listening to it a week later or whatever, like still jump on and get it, because even if you've missed the first week or whatever, you get the replays and access to everything. Ives, if anyone's watching this, they're like, all right, this guy's cool. I want to follow him for tips and advice. Yeah. Best place to follow you?
Yeah, just on my Insta, I'm at physioyves or YS physio is probably the best way to go about sussing me out, and send me a DM. I know that many of you do. I love helping interacting with the community. So please do, or just tag us on the FEO community at Ives Silvera. I don't think there's any other Ives there, but there might be. So I'll make
myself
known.
You're the only Ives Silvera in Australia, man.
I know, I think so.
Awesome. All right. Anything I should have asked you but forgot to, Ives, or anything you want to finish us off with?
Just in terms of the course, like, you know, we went through the accreditation and got the level, the upper body, the lower body training one accredited, which is great. So if you've done the lower body training course, this is a great one to build on it. But at the same time, feel free to jump on live and do that. And like you said, with this early bird special, I would just get in quick and really, even if you can't jump on live, it would be really good for you to have this as a resource, because I think it's going to help you tremendously.
Awesome. All right, Ives, thanks for your time.
Cheers, Jono.
Thank you for listening. If you liked this show, share it with your friends, subscribe on iTunes, and leave us a 5-star review. For show notes and free training on how to grow your fitness business, visit www.fitnesseducationonline.com.au.
Are you a fitness professional looking to provide your clients with personalized meal plans? Check out Mealsy, the ultimate solution for creating custom meal plans in just a few simple clicks. With Mealsy, you can say goodbye to countless hours spent on meal planning. Our Australian Meal Planning web app is designed to save you time and effort, so you can focus on what really matters, your clients and their success. Mealsy provides you with a vast library of recipes, all created by nutrition professionals, from breakfast to dinner and everything in between. We've got you covered. Whether you want to create a custom meal plan tailored to your client's needs or choose from our selection of ready-made meal plans, Mealsy has the flexibility to accommodate your preferences. So why waste precious time and energy creating meal plans from scratch? Let Mealsy do the heavy lifting for you, while you focus on delivering exceptional fitness services. Join the community of fitness professionals who have revolutionized their business with Mealsy. Visit our website at www.mealsy.com and sign up today. Mealsy, the smarter way to meal plan for fitness professionals.